Chapter 2, 1900. When they entered the house, Sarah and the children rushed to greet him. "I thought it would take you at least 2 days." And then she saw the scratches on his face, the torn sleeve and the bandaged arm. She pulled back initially. Her hand went to her mouth, and then she regained her composure. "Children, please go play while I take care of your father's wounds." The children had shrunk back, and she could see the terror on their faces. They'd never seen their father wounded. He settled in the rocking chair by the kitchen fireplace while she went for bandages and ointment. "Did you have to perform hand-to-hand combat with the damned lion?" she asked as she pulled off his shirt and examined his wounds. "The lion was a little anxious and tried to get me. I couldn't wait. I look worse than I feel. The wounds are primarily superficial." "Are you serious? There's a 2-inch gash on your right arm. You probably need a couple of stitches. But the face is what bothers me. You could have lost your eye. One claw mark is only a 1/2 inch from your eye. I'm going to use alcohol on the cuts and scratches. It's going to sting, but it serves you right for scaring me." She could feel him tense as she dabbed the alcohol on the cuts. His right pant leg was torn, so Sarah cut the pant leg up the side. The gash on the leg was minor, and she swabbed it with alcohol and bandaged the wound. "I suggest a glass of whiskey and a hot bath. I can have Naomi prepare it now. Let me have the whiskey first, and I'll take a bath later. I want to hear what one has to say about the hanging. Tommy, you have to take your wounds seriously. I'm fine. If I wasn't, I'd tell you so. I want to sit here and listen to what one has to say. Darn it, you're going to give me a heart attack. I'll get your whiskey." Juan pulled up a chair in front of Tommy. Jerry Knutson came upon the body about 6 in the morning. Needless to say, he was shocked. It was a little eerie, because there was a breeze and the body was swinging back and forth. He ran down Saguntah as fast as he could and woke up the town constable, who in turn got Dr. Cunnan out of bed. By the time the town constable reached the scene, there were 20 people milling around. The constable didn't know what to do. "Someone suggested he send for you. Rather than go out to the ranch, he came to our law office and asked me to get you. You haven't told me who was hanged." "It was Simon Higgins, the barber." Sarah was standing behind Tommy's chair as Juan related the incident. "I know him. He's an ex-soldier who worked for us. You remember him, don't you? Tommy?"
"Ido. I didn't know him well, but he seemed like a pleasant sort. Who'd want to hang a barber unless he cut some customer's hair too short?"
Tommy laughed and then winced and grabbed his arm. "He was your barber, wasn't he? I've heard you complain about him several times. In fact, you said he cut one side shorter than the other." Sarah laughed.
"Yep, but I was out of the area when this happened. A likely story. The only one that can corroborate that is a dead lion." He couldn't help but smile as he turned to Juan. "Where's the body now?"
"As far as I know, it's still hanging from a beam in front of the post office. The constable doesn't want to proceed until you look at everything. You're not going, are you?"
"I don't see why not. We can take the rig and you can drive. Tommy, you look a mess. They'll think you had something to do with it," Juan said. Sarah brought in a fresh pot of coffee, some warm muffins for her husband and son, and placed them on the table in the nook. "I gather they want you to take a look at the body and explain the ghost shirt. Juan told me that some people are worried there might be a Sioux uprising."
"You mean 80-year-old little bear and his 60-year-old son, who can't walk, are seen as threats to our community? Well, there are you and Juan, aren't there?"
Sarah laughed.
"Don't make me laugh. I hurt all over. The town constable is asking for my help. He and I are hunting buddies. What harm could it do if I went into town and looked at everything? It's still early. Juan can take me in the rig and then bring me back. You had a traumatic incident, and I'm worried about infection. I don't want you to go."
When he didn't answer, Sarah shrugged.
"I know I'm not going to win this argument, so I'll fix something you can take with you. I want you to promise to have the doctor put some stitches on the right arm while you're in town."
Tommy put his arm around her waist, letting his hand slip much lower as he pulled her to him. She leaned down and he kissed her gently on the mouth.
Juan laughed.
"That's my mother you're taking liberties with."
"I know, I know."
The three laughed.
"Juan, you make sure he gets stitches in his arm."
"Yes, mother."
Juan ducked as Sarah playfully swung at him.
"You men are all alike." The sky was clear. The light drizzle had ended,
and the temperature was still in the 50s when Tommy and Juan arrived at the post office. He was greeted by Charles Little, the town constable. A crowd of maybe 20 people were gathered in a circle around the body. The victim, Simon Higgins, was still hanging from a beam outside the post office. An odor was obvious, but a slight breeze was keeping it down somewhat. The body had been hanging for at least 15 hours. Rigor mortis had set in. Tommy walked around the body, carefully taking into account the rope around Higgins' neck and the boot marks on the ground below the body. The rope holding the body was secured to the hitching post in front of the building. Tommy noticed a couple of men he knew. "Can you help the constable take down the body? It's stiff, so be careful." They laid the body on the wooden flooring outside the post office entrance, and Little removed the rope from around the victim's neck. Tommy estimated that the barber was 5 feet 8 inches tall and weighed about 160 pounds. "I don't see any footprints other than these distinctive boot marks." He pointed to the many diamond-shaped marks on the ground under the sign. Tommy tried to see if he could determine where the boots led. After 20 feet, the marks disappeared into the gravel-lined Saguntaw Street. It would take someone pretty strong to lift the body up and tie the rope to the hitching post. "There may be more than one person involved," Little said. Tommy asked the constable to take off the ghost shirt so they could look at it. While he was doing that, Tommy looked at the rope burns around the victim's neck. "Charles, look at these marks on Higgins' neck. In addition to the rope burns, there are bruises as well, probably thumb and finger marks. Someone may have tried to strangle him. Maybe he was strangled first and then hanged here. Who'd want to do that?" Little asked. Tommy shrugged and turned to Dr. Cunnan. "Maybe you can do some sort of autopsy and confirm how he died. He may have been strangled." The doctor nodded. "Who do you think did this?" Little asked. "I don't have a theory, but putting that ghost shirt on the victim seems like a message to me. Do you recognize the ghost shirt?" Tommy picked up the ghost shirt. It was made of white cloth and painted blue around the collar. There were figures of birds painted on the front, while the back held crude images of a bow and arrow and drawings of the moon and sun. Down the sleeves were rows of feathers tied by a quill and left to fly in the breeze. "I've seen ghost dances, and I've even performed in one, but I was gone from the reservation before the craze swept the Sioux Nation. From what I remember, this shirt is similar to those used in ghost dances at the Standing Rock Reservation. There are a couple of other things that point to Lakota rituals. Painting the face red is something that my people did with the dead. The lock of hair with the tin cup at the victim's feet is part of that same ritual." "You think the Sioux did this?" Little asked. "Could be. And then again, someone may be suggesting we look that way. Charles, I suggest you take pictures of the rope, the body, the marks around his neck, the boot marks on the ground, the tin cup, the paint on the victim's face, and especially the ghost shirt. It may turn out to be nothing, but at least you'll have something to refer to if there's another instance." "You think there may be other hangings?" Little asked. "I meant to say that you'll have a record of the crime if you take photos. There's a photographer in town. Tell him what you want. I need a couple of stitches in my arm. One will take me to Cunnan's brother. I was mauled by a lion this morning, but I'll be back in an hour. After you take pictures, you should let Dr. Cunnan take the body." The crowd, including a very interested young man, gathering around the body, seemed to be in shock. After Tommy left, the young man asked one of the bystanders who the Mexican gentleman with the bandage on his arm was. "That's Tommy Sanchez, and I don't believe he's Mexican. The word is that he's a Sioux half-breed and the son of Sitting Bull. The word is also that he's not someone to antagonize. Do you think he could be involved in the hanging? He's pretty banged up." "No. The constable told me that he was attacked by a mountain lion this morning. He's pretty savvy and someone who helps out the sheriff once in a while. He's probably the best tracker in the area. Tommy and Juan returned in an hour, and were told by the constable that photos had been taken as suggested and that Dr. Cunnan took the body to his office. What did you do with the ghost shirt?" Tommy asked. "The doctor has it. Do you want to keep it?" "No. I just want to know where it is. The rope used in the hanging is very coarse. You might want to see who sells that brand in this area. It could give you a lead. The boot marks are also distinctive. Check the general stores and see if they carry boots with that kind of tread." Little acknowledged the suggestions. "Have you looked at Higgins' room in the barber shop?" Tommy asked. "No. I was waiting for you. Let's go. Piggins lived in a solitary room in the back of the barber shop, across the street from the post office. They lit a kerosene lamp on one of the tables and looked around the room, searching for anything that might give them some information as to why the barber was killed. They found his birth certificate and 1896 discharge papers from the U.S. Army in the top dresser drawer. I know he was discharged from the Army in 1896 and worked for me soon after that, both at our ranch and later on the old Singleton spread, after we bought it, Tommy said. I've seen Higgins around town, but as far as I know, he kept to himself and was never married. He was 30 years old, Little said. The bed was in disarray, and there were muddy footprints on the floor. Charles, these boot marks look similar to those found under the corpse. He may have been strangled here, and then carried to where he was found. Little looked at the boot marks on the floor and made a note of their existence. I would suggest that you try to recreate the last few hours of Higgins' life. He may have met someone tonight. I also think you need to seal off this room until the sheriff gets a look at it. It's up to the sheriff to follow up, Tommy said. The Pinkertons have an office in Santa Barbara. I suggest you call and tell them what you know and ask their advice. They may have some information that could help you, and then again, they may not. I've done all I can for you. Let me know what you find out. As Tommy and Juan got in the carriage and left the area, their every movement was watched by a young man looking through the front window of the general store.